This special episode is brought to you by O'Reilly Media and JupiterCon. On August 22nd to 25th, JupiterCon is a conference of everything related to the Jupiter ecosystem, from trainings to tutorials to speakers to everything. And O'Reilly Media wants you to know, which is why they're sponsoring this episode, that the special early pricing ends on June 30th, which is like 2 days from now from when I'm recording this. So if you want to use the early pricing, you can use the coupon PDPODCAST, that's PDPODCAST, to save 20% on most passes. And I think you get a bonus on top of that if you do it before the June 30th. So right now we are going to have actually a guest of the show. So I don't really know why they're paying me to say this. Guest of the show, Paco Nathan, super awesome guy. We are going to talk about JupiterCon and we're going to talk about attending conferences and just everything awesome because he is my favorite person and I would probably have him on this show even if they weren't paying me to say this. Welcome to Partially Derivative, the show about data, data science, drinking, and awesomeness. This week, we have a special bonus episode because today is either Thursday or Friday, depending on how well I edit this thing. Today, we are talking to Paco, who is, you know, it is hard to actually say everything that you are and everything that you do because, you know, I was looking at your LinkedIn the other day. So one, I will say upfront, me and Paco have known each other for a long time. So the fact that this is actually, like, someone has actually sponsored an episode for me and Paco to talk is crazy because you've also been a guest on the show, which is like, so whatever, I will take O'Reilly's money. But I will say Paco has had, you've had everything. Like you have been senior software engineer multiple times. You've been, you know, chair of whatever, director of analytics, director of programming, director of science, like chief science officer. Like you have been everything everywhere. And now you're doing a lot of stuff around, you know, with O'Reilly, with helping with their content and sort of the events that they put on.
Yeah.
And so you are on today about a few weeks before JupiterCon. So in this episode, what we really wanted to do was talk about sort of two things. You know, what is Jupiter and what is JupiterCon? And two, you know, if you are thinking of going to a technical conference, which is, you know, not like a video game conference or not, you know, not like some other conferences you go to, like what do you get from that? Like how do you really take advantage of that to absolutely roll it? So without further ado, Paco, introduce yourself.
Thank you kindly, Chris. Well, it's a great pleasure to be on Partially Derivative. I'm a huge, huge fan of Partially Derivative. So I'm super excited about what's going on with Jupiter. I'm at O'Reilly, and one of your other show guests pointed out to me recently that I've been at O'Reilly longer now than any other company in the past 10 years, which is say 2 years. But I've definitely been in this space for a long time, working with O'Reilly for like about 14 years.
Wow.
And it's super fun because I get to work a lot on, you know, how people do tutorials at conferences, how they do online training, mm-hmm. How they build up like interactive tutorials based on Jupiter. And, you know, our team has gotten to do a lot of really fun work and sort of, you know, ranging from like the staid pedagogy sorts of things, curriculum, all that, all the way out to like, how can we ship this notebook in a Docker container and show off TensorFlow? So, you know, it's kind of a wide range of stuff, but it's super fun. And the audience that we have, you know, covers everything from like DevOps to data science to mm-hmm. how to conduct an interview, things like that.
That's so cool. So like, I will admit, I have like a really strong Pavlovian response to anything that's Jupiter based, because it's like a safe spot to be in. Like, you know, the content could be really tough. It could be a very, you know, mathematical tutorial, or it could be a really difficult script. But if it is based in, you know, something Jupiter related, I feel like better that it's a good place to start.
It's an anti-anxiolytic for technology, especially data science.
Yeah, no. I think that's what's so interesting about you know, about these kind of notebooks. So for people who don't know, Jupiter, and there's a few others out there, are notebook-based IDEs, I guess I would call them, where...
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's a good way.
I mean, I guess
we can dig into that.
What would you say it was if you were going to describe it?
Okay, well, it's, you know, I was in a meeting and Fernando was describing how they came about this. And the thing that floored me was at the heart of it, Jupyter is a suite of network protocols. So if you think of like HTTP being a network protocol for like the remote semantics of what do you do with files. You get a file, you put a file, you delete a file, you update a file. And HTTP is just basically, how do I manipulate those files over there? And so Jupyter is at its core a suite of network protocols of saying, I want to run some code on a server over there. Here's like a block of code, run it in this environment and give me back the results. And that's really at its core what it's all about. But then like the last mile, the thing that got popular was, have you ever worked with Mathematica Wolfram Notebooks?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, going back, and even before the web existed as an idea, Wolfram was out there doing notebooks for Mathematica, you know, initially as desktop apps, and then later they migrated to the web. So they have decades of doing really rich work in terms of mathematics and analytics and visualization based on notebooks. And so Jupyter started out as IPython, along with other things in IPython, you know, pandas and all that came out of there. Mm-hmm. But Jupyter started out as IPython notebook, where you could take and run some code on a remote kernel. So maybe you're a student at a university and you've got a supercomputer, you've got access, you can run the kernel down there, run the code on the supercomputer, but be working on your laptop. And the thing that the notebook did, like what Mathematica had done for years, is rather than just me hacking together a script to do the thing and then forgetting about it and trying to come back to my script 6 months later and what was I thinking? How does this even work? Instead, with the notebook, you can put in rich text. You can put in markdown, so it's basically like building a web page. But you can also have blocks of code that can run, whether they're running Python or R or Julia, or now I think it's up to like 70 different environments.
Yeah.
And then you can also get the output. So you can basically have this whole like linear flow of like, I want to do XYZ, and then step one, run this cell. Oh, here's the output. Based on that, run the next cell. Oh, here's how it changes. And then boom, let me get a visualization. Let me tweak the XYZ axis on the visualization. So it's a really interactive way of having this kind of structured flow through things where hopefully you can share it with other people. And I think that that's the thing that was really killer is it's not just me hacking together some script and dropping it into GitHub. It's me trying to work with my team and convey some insights that I can repeat, or I can send it to somebody else and they can repeat it themselves.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, just as an example, I am actually writing an O'Reilly book right now, and it is just Jupyter notebooks. The whole book is just awesome. Jupyter notebooks, because it's such a good format, because it allows you, it sort of feels like that classic scientific notebook of code and math and text descriptions, and it's all just sort of laid out. That makes it a really, really popular format. But again, in my Jupyter setup, I've got PySpark, SQL, PyScala, like Spark R, three versions Jensen. Of R, just a whole bunch of ones out there that you can run, and that's only a few of what you could do. But it's all in this one nice, like, sort of environment, not really an environment, but like one sort of ecosystem of things that all play really well together. And I have actually seen people more and more deliver internal analytics just with a Jupyter notebook. Like they will hide the code cell. So normally you'd have like a code cell that makes a chart and then a chart that would display under it. But you can actually just hide the code cells and then give it to someone. And it's actually just all the chart. And if they want, they can like look at the individual code cells and see what you did. But like, it's actually a really great way of sort of doing nice analytics pretty fast and giving it to people in a way that's pretty beautiful. Like, it's not like straight D3 New York Times style visualization, but like
it's not that polished. But it sort of starts out as like a structured log file. If you could think of having a log file that had some comments that maybe even had hyperlinks in them, and then it also had some of the code was serialized out to the log, and then also some of the data and some of the results, So you could like follow the progression of a thing in a log file. Now, if you could take and turn that into a dashboard, that's sort of the spectrum of what Jupyter allows you to do.
Yeah. So for JupyterCon, what are if someone is going as their first technical conference they've ever been to, and you've hooked them right now on JupyterCon, what is the sort of way that they can, you know, really exploit the experience and get the most out of it?
Absolutely. Well, first off, please, yeah, come to JupyterCon. This is going to be a blast. So the thing about it is that there, Jupyter itself as a project is very distributed. It's actually very rare for all the developers to be in one place at one time. So one of the things that's going to be rare about this is it's the first international conference for Jupyter, and it's really going to be the first time that like everybody working on it is going to be in one place. So you know, if you want to talk to anybody or hear about what's going on, they're going to all be there. But then more than that, you know, there's a lot of different pillars to this. So the people who are just rock stars at teaching with Jupyter, and seriously, from my perspective in media, you know, people don't make textbooks anymore because there's no market for it. So mm-hmm. like if you're an assistant professor, rather than writing a textbook, you're writing Jupyter notebooks. Yep. Like what you're doing to build a book, you're teaching through Jupyter. And there are some fantastic people who've been leading education based on Jupyter, like Lorena Barba in engineering at GW, you know, and all the work that she has her grad students doing on GPUs for, you know, massive simulations. But all the instructions, you know, really the foundation of it is based on Jupyter. And she's learned a lot and taught other instructors, professors about how to really teach effectively. Berkeley has the data science program that they're trying to turn into a sophomore requirement for every Berkeley undergrad for data science. And all that's being hosted through Jupyter Notebooks. And it's not just the notebooks, it's also the ecosystem. So there's Jupyter Hub, like, you know, Berkeley might have some ginormous course, and there's a cluster, and, you know, every student gets a container, and it's all being run through Jupyter Hub. So it's sort of that kind of like cluster solution. We're using that at O'Reilly for our online courses. Then there's also Jupyter Lab, which is, like you're saying, more of an IDE kind of a thing, yeah. where you, if you want to plug in Emacs and plug in Jenkins for whatever unholy reason you would want to put those two things together, you can do it. It's real simple. So there's, you know, there's a whole range of things going on. There's collaborative documents. There's going to be a lot of great presentations about the whole ecosystem. But, you know, it's, again, getting back to the pillars, we're going to have all the right developers there. We're going to have people who use it in education. And more importantly, the thing that really is a pleasant surprise for me is just how much breadth there is in industry. I mean, you know, it's about putting the science in data science. It's about having repeatable science in data science. And that appeals not just to people doing analytics. That appeals to people in manufacturing because they want to calibrate that their car factory in Atlanta is producing something similar to their car factory in Berlin. And so, you know, as it turns out, they're using Jupyter Notebooks to do that delivery of industrial data science. Yeah. Same thing if you go to finance, hedge funds, insurance. There's going to be a lot of that coming out of the financial sector, medical sector. It's a lot of real solid, like, if we want to talk about enterprise-y data science, Jupyter is going to be the real focus point for that, I believe.
No, I mean, you know, I have noticed more and more that whenever I'm sort of looking to use a Jupyter notebook on any kind of enterprise system, you know, like you could talk about Amazon's sort of cluster EMR stuff. You could talk about Databricks. You could talk about there was another one out there.
Azure and Google has Data Lab. And yeah, exactly.
And they all, like, you can always run, you know, this sort of Jupyter setup there that makes everything really, you know, like you might have one computer, you might just have your laptop behind the scenes, or you might have 1,000 computers, but your interface is, you know, like there's various interfaces Jupyter, like the notebook is the most popular one, but you're right, there's like, you know, there's other ways of, you could do the repo or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But like you have that same setup and that same sort of ecosystem to work with, and you know like the basics of how it works, and then you could, the back end, the sort of engine behind it is such a wide range of stuff that's just so awesome.
Well, I think that it's just sort of the tip of the iceberg, because people are thinking about Jupyter tying it to a given programming language and a REPL. Like, I have a Scala REPL, I speak Scala in my Jupyter notebook to my kernel. But it's richer than that, because, like, for instance, at O'Reilly, we do machine learning pipelines that are managed through through Jupyter by using it for, like, how we do active learning. So for our human-in-the-loop sort of management design pattern of where, you know, we have complex machine learning pipelines, but if the ensembles don't agree, they want to kick it back to a human to, you know, train, iterate on training. And that's all managed because basically the machines and the people are sharing Jupyter notebooks.
Yeah.
No, so we're seeing those kind of applications is really super exciting.
Yeah, and I've actually found that Jupyter notebooks, that one tool, which I think is actually pretty rare, where it's a tool that is really sort of the way someone who's just beginning to learn data science should use. Like, if you're really trying to learn it, just start with the notebooks, because it's a beautiful, it is the best way to learn the basics, but it's also a production grade solution. Like, this is, you know, it's not a toy. It is what the, like, actual high level pros are using. It's just the same thing. So the thing that you want to do when you want to do basic stuff, just getting into the field, and the thing that you want to do when, you know, you're a senior developer is the same. That is, like, a beautiful opportunity.
And also another side of that is, if you want to get a job in data science, I guarantee the best thing you could do is come up with an interesting problem, grab some data, illustrate it in a notebook, and check it into your repo on GitHub, because the hiring managers look, and it'll be rendered right there in GitHub, and everybody will see what you can produce. It's like having a portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, this is just goes so far. I use Jupyter. My personal website is actually all Jupyter notebooks that are converted into Pelican, so, like, you know, converted into HTML and then, like, formatted to look like a website. But they are, you can go on GitHub and see all the Jupyter notebooks. Every single there's like 500 tutorials on there. All 500 are actually just Jupyter notebooks behind the scenes.
Wow, awesome. Well, you know, one of the themes that we're seeing is Jupyter as a front end for AI. Like, the one of the main AI projects at Stanford University, they had a really complex system that was hard to install, and they did Rev2 that was all based on Python, and rather than create a dedicated UI, they just used Jupyter notebooks. So I think that we're seeing, you know, if you want to, you know, take the leap and jump into, you know, pretty hardcore AI, this is a great vector for it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Paco, thank you.
Can I put in one thing about Well, you know, if this is your first time going to a technology conference, there's a few cues that might help out, because this won't be like an academic conference. This will be a technology conference like we do Strata and OSCON and the others. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is there's a lot of interesting people going to be there. And we have this thing called the hallway track, where some people, you know, may not even go to the sessions because they're so absorbed in talking with the people that they meet in the hallway and just what's going on. So look for the hallway track. There'll be meetups in the evenings, people going out to dinner, find out what's going on and join some people. I've talked to people from large banks who go to these conferences just to hear the questions that their competitors at other banks ask, so that they can get some competitive analysis. I mean, there's just a richness of dialogue going on. So, come to the conference, but, you know, keep your ears open, because it's about the people who are there in one place at one time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the hallways and the dinners after are definitely one of the best things to go. And the thing that you can't go by watching a tutorial online or watching the videos online.
Not on the video.
Awesome. Thank you, Paco, so much. I will free you up for the rest of the day, although we could talk forever, and we have to have you back on the podcast sometime for a longer episode.
Looking forward. Thank you very much, Chris.
Yeah, have a good day.
You too.